became president of the American Society of Biological Chemists, what kind of agenda did you have? Were you at this point concerned with women's issues? Were you concerned with...
Not particularly. There were certain issues, of course, that had to be settled. I should tell you how it works. The president, there are two meetings a year of the council, and there are a list of committees, and the committee reports are the things one goes over, and then of course one gets a report from JBC, from the journal, and any other issues which may arise. There's one business meeting a year over which the general membership over which the president presides. Yes, I apparently had the shortest meeting on record. One of my friends came, it was all over, he couldn't believe it. He's so used to it going on and on. Some years there have been controversial issues, and some years there haven't been. There have been political issues occasionally, in that at the general meeting, this didn't happen when I was president, but at other meetings, when certain members wanted certain resolutions of a political nature to be passed by the group. Sometimes it was rejected. There was always a hot debate, anyhow. And sometimes it was rejected, sometimes accepted, depending on the issue. And then, of course, at one point, was it during my presidency? Well, I think so. The question did come up of whether we should meet in a city or in a place where the ERA amendment had been defeated or some such thing. I've forgotten just what the issue was. And everything was decided very democratically there. There were votes taken on these issues. We had, for example, an issue of who the executive secretary should be. That's an important job because that's the only full-time job.
Right, that's a paid position.
Yes, yes.
Right.
And that became a very pressing issue while I was president. First time in my life, I decided instead of calling an extra meeting of the council to have a telephone conference.
Oh, yes.
I'd never done that before. It worked out quite well because there were about 12 people on the council.
Oh.
So.
Yeah.
It was quite a large
undertaking.
Yes. But the telephone company does most of it for you.
Yeah, well, I imagine they would.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They probably charge enough
for it. They profit from it.
Yes.
Yeah.
I did inaugurate some changes, as other presidents before me had, too. Sometimes the president can... one of the big things is the program of the meetings.
Right.
And I remember, I guess Paul Berg preceded me by a year or two. And he introduced, I was on the program committee or something at that time. He introduced these mini symposia, which worked out very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when poster sessions were introduced, but they were introduced fairly early and they worked out well too.
Mm-hmm.
I instituted an organizational change. We used to have these council meetings and these endless reports by chairmen of the various committees, and I thought that was quite wasteful of time. So what I did, the council members really didn't have anything to do in between meetings. I just assigned each one of them to one of the committees as a liaison. Someone where the chairman of the committee was in the same city as
right.
they were. And then, if the chairman still wanted to present, okay. Otherwise, this liaison person, who was on the council anyhow, would rather succinctly tell us what the committee had been doing. And also advise the committee. I thought there should be more connection between the committees and the council.
Right.
And that, I think, has continued.
Mm-hmm. That's a significant change, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just giving you a flavor of the kind of thing that you had to do.
Sure. Now they've just changed their name.
Mm-hmm.
What is the?
It's now the American Society of Biochemistry and Molecular Biology, ASBMB.
Okay, just because it better describes the current activity of the members, or?
Well, no. You see, they want to attract these people as members. First, they wanted to attract them to publish in the journal, because some of the most exciting work was in the molecular biology area.
Mm-hmm.
And they succeeded in that, but they didn't succeed in getting these people to come to meetings. And their argument was no one else had included the molecular biologists in any other organization. So they wanted to preempt that area and attract these people to meetings. I personally actually voted against it. I was outvoted 75-25, something like that, 3-1. Because I said I felt molecular biology was a subdivision of biochemistry. And if someone invents another term, what are you going to do with it?
Add another
yes.
term to the name.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You've received a fairly large number of awards at one time or another, and been awarded a number of honorary degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You needn't answer this with one of the awards or anything. What in your career has given you the most satisfaction? Obviously, an award would not, probably.
No, the awards all came too late.
Right.
As I pointed out to the American Chemical Society, after I got the Garvin Award, I suggested that they limit it to women under 40. Because, you know, by the time you're 50 or 60, it doesn't mean that much to you.
Right.
They refused. They said there were too many women above the age of 40 who should be honored and hadn't been. Well, then it means you never can make a change. What gave me the most satisfaction? Oh, that's hard to say. Let me think. I have to think about that a while.
Okay.
I don't want to give you an offhand answer on that one. I guess of the honors that I've gotten, probably being elected to the National Academy gave me the most satisfaction, because I felt that was my peers who were...
Right.
Well, I don't know. I have to think about it, though. Okay. But that is one thing that gave me a great deal of satisfaction.
Okay. Tell you what you can do once we go through all this, when you get to that question again. And having thought about it, you can just add the paragraphs you want in there. Okay. I happen to look at that Garvin address, and you concluded on a note of optimism, suggesting that improvements in the techniques and increased sensitivity would allow abandonment of underhanded methods, that is, things like proton relaxation rates.
Uh-huh. Indirect
one will look at individual protons and phosphorus atoms in the substrate as it interacts with the enzyme,
mm-hmm.
Using what you then referred to as continuous wave NMR. How far have we gotten toward that? Some of that.
We've gotten much closer. I mean, the sensitivity that was available in 1963 was just... I never could have done the experiments that I did in the 70s with those kinds of instruments, so I was quite right that one could look directly at phosphorus and protons and so on. And now, of course, people look at proteins and get structure. So,
where do you see...
In fact, I would have been... I underestimated the possibility in 1963.
Uh-huh.
I never thought it would get to the state that it has. The two great things that have happened is, first of all, Fourier transform.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is the introduction of 2D NMR. But as far as sensitivity is concerned, it's the Fourier transform that did it. The 2D just gives you more information. It's not more sensitive, it's less sensitive. You need higher concentrations, actually.
Right.
But it was the Fourier transform and improvement in probe design and so on. I mean, in the hardware, so to speak.
Also, the superconducting magnets.
Oh, yes, of course, the higher frequencies. The right. magnets, of course, have gone higher and higher, and then. You see, it's questionable whether these very high values will do you much good with nuclei other than protons if you go much higher, because then you're done in by the anisotropy, and the lines start getting, you don't get any advantage. We found that in the fluorine and tRNA, that if you went from 100 megahertz to 300 megahertz, you didn't improve things anymore, because the lines would get broader. So even though your resolution is better, your lines are broader and you're left exactly where you were before. This thing doesn't want to stay on. Thank you. But there have been such fantastic technical improvements, as well as the bright idea of using Fourier transform, that no one could have imagined in 1963 what it would be like in 1987. I remember George Pegg, who was originally a student of Purcell, knew about NMR. He said to me, it's intrinsically an insensitive method, and that's true. And he didn't think, he would never have believed that they could do the kind of thing they can do now. Of course, that was before the days of superconducting magnets of this type. I mean, they had superconducting magnets, I think, even then, but not any that had the homogeneity and could be used for high resolution that we have today. That was a real breakthrough.
Somebody once told me the story that when the physicists first saw the first signal, they were pleased just to get one line, that they weren't even seeing the difference between protons and
They wanted to get only one line. Yeah, they were very upset when they got more than one line.
I see.
You see, because they were only interested in the properties of the naked nucleus. They weren't interested in the chemical shifts, the chemical environment. That's why they always used to say, that's why they called it the chemical shift.
Two last very general questions. One is, where do you see the future of biochemistry? And maybe we have to narrow that, but from your own experience, where do you see the big fields, the important
problems? I remember the last time I saw Corey alive was just a few months before he died.
This would have been
2-3 years ago. And we were talking about that, and he said, and I think he's right, he said in his time one was interested in enzyme mechanism and so on, and now one is interested in regulation. I think the regulation is the really big thing, that what regulates all the biological functions in a chemical sense. I mean, to find out the chemistry of regulation, which is a very broad field, because it's question of whether you're talking about neurochemistry, nervous system, or other systems. But that and development, that is growth and development, because those two fields are fascinating fields, and they're being very actively worked on at this point. I think those two areas will be where biochemistry will go in the future. And I suppose structure. Well, structure, the X-ray and the NMR. The NMR still can't do molecules more than about 10,000 molecular weight. While with X-ray now, with the synchrotron radiation, they can even look at viruses.
Absolutely amazing.
Yes, it is. So
taking photographs of your
fantastic.
What if advice would you give to a student looking for a career in science today? And in particular, a woman student.
Well, I, from my own experience and from what I've observed, a woman student should always go into a new area and become expert in a new area. Because then, when she's ready for a job, there are really so few people who are capable of handling the job that a woman will be chosen whether they want a woman or not. They need a person in that area. Also, in a rapidly developing area, there's more opportunity for jobs for both sexes. But I think for women particularly, it's important to go into areas that are newly developing.
And in general, what should students be doing? Where do you think students should just be looking these days? Obviously, biochemistry is the hot field.
Cell biology, whatever you want to call it. Cell biology is a very hot field. Immunology is a very hot field. That's a fascinating area right now. It really is, because of the developments in that field, monoclonal antibodies and then these peptide antigens and so on. It's a very exciting field, I think.
Well, I appreciate all the time you spent with me.
Yes.
I thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's been a fascinating interview.